KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, live and local, presents The On-Air Chat. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harder and Ron Thomas.
Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to The On-Air Chat. We are brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Good morning, Ron Thomas.
Morning, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
Doing good today. Just fine. We've been very lucky here the last couple of days that we haven't had the extreme heat that was promised by the forecast due to some timely cloud cover and showers we've had unexpectedly past couple
welcome.
Of mornings. Yeah, no doubt about that.
Makes it just a hair muggier, but if the cloud cover can stay and the sun's not beating down on us, it's better than what was forecasted.
And the good news is that high temperatures will continue, but we'll lose a little of the humidity, lower dew points starting tomorrow through the weekend. But we're back in the 100s early next week. But there is light at the end of the tunnel, because I think next Thursday we're going to be seeing temperatures in the 80s, possibly.
Woo!
So it's not too far down the pike.
Just in time for the fair. And you know what comes right after the fair? School starts.
Back to school.
That's where our guests come in. Welcome Greg Jordan and Lisa Soler from the Lyon County History Center. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Aaron.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. You?
I'm doing just fine. I'm glad she dragged you along.
Well, I'm here for support.
And comic relief.
And yes. And the real guest. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Aaron.
How
Good
are
morning,
you?
Ron. I'm well. Let's, yeah. Let's, I'm enjoying the weather. I
yes.
mean, you know, I'm not a summer gal. I do not like the heat at all. Greg does. But I do not. So bring on those cooler temperatures.
Yeah.
No Is
kidding.
The air
that
conditioner
makes me
working at LCHC?
Oh, it's the coolest place in town.
There we go.
Coolest place in town. And so is our house. We have to say, we got a new air conditioner 2 years ago, and world of difference. So if anybody out there has an old
AC.
AC, you need to get it replaced, because we keep ours at 74.
And it still feels great.
And
it,
I'm still covering with
a blanket.
I'm still covering with a blanket at 74.
Wow. That's not
so
bad.
So that's nice.
It's nice.
It's very nice.
Well, let's talk back to school. Where do you want to start?
There was so much to talk about with school. I mean, Emporia, you know, is education central for Kansas.
Teachertown USA.
Teachertown USA. I mean, and I know we talked about this a year ago. I went back and looked, and because I have to admit, when I was researching some of it, I was like, this sounds familiar. But hopefully this will be either a refresher on some of those things from a year ago and some new things. And, you know, I thought about maybe just talking about first. You know, what was the first school? What was the first school district? Who was the first teacher? And just those kinds of bits of information.
Was there was probably a school before a school district?
Yes. Yes. In fact, a lot of them, which I didn't even know until I started to research the second round, they were called subscription schools. And they were exactly what, you know, subscription is you signed your child. It was a private school, in essence.
One-roomer?
Pardon?
One-room schoolhouse?
This is 1858, 57, 58, 59. So, probably, you know, a log cabin or a frame house or a frame building. So just pretty crude, you know, to today's standards. Now some of them were free. So, especially the first one that was here in Emporia, that the first teacher was Mary Jane Watson, she was the first graduate from the Kansas State Normal, along with Ellen Plum. Prior to that, she had started a school, and it was a subscription school, but it was for free. So you had to sign up. It was private, but it was free. Now, not every
school.
That
was our first here in...
That was the first one here in Emporia. Now, Lyon County,
okay.
There was the first schoolhouse was built in the Kirkendall settlement. Have you ever heard of the Kirkendall settlement?
I have not.
So the Kirkendall settlement was southwest of Emporia, around Lockerman Bridge in that area. And a Mr. Gardner of New York, who was later married to one of Mr. Kirkendall's daughters, was the first teacher. And this was in 1857. And so, yeah, again, it was, you know, around the Lockerman Bridge, there was this small settlement, the Kirkendall settlement. He owned the property, Mr. Kirkendall, and gave part of the land for a school. And that's usually how it was, is these landowners would give their land for a school. And maybe it was a couple of acres, I think, that they would give these for these rural schools. Because, you know, you have to put everything in historical context. And so, yeah, things are pretty concentrated in a town. But when you get out into the country, and this is before the days of vehicles, and I mean, to ride a carriage or a horse a couple of miles took much longer than what it does in 2024.
You're not bussing from Americus to Northern Heights.
Exactly. And so there were schools every, you know, 5, 6, 7 miles to make sure that children had access to education. You know, so even – and this isn't just, you know, a Kansas thing or a Lyon County thing. I mean, this is pretty, you know, standard throughout the United States and back east.
Yeah, my dad's farmstead, which we still own up in northern Kansas in Bern, they have the one-room schoolhouses on property. I mean, it's falling apart, but
– and that's the sad part. And that's one of the – you know, we track what kind of research requests we get, and histories of old schools rank up, you know, high with the bird murder.
Murders.
And you know, the scandalous and that, but people wanting to know about schools because they were public. And so they want to see where their grandparent or great-grandparent attended school. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of them have gone, you know, to the wayside and, you know, because they've, you know, they're abandoned. And sometimes that farmland, it's just that farmland. Yeah. There's no other buildings around. And so they start to deteriorate. And once they get to a point,
plant some corn.
You knock it down and plant some corn. And that's that. Because there really were some great schools here, you know, in Lyon County.
So how many schools did we have in Lyon County at one time?
At one time, there was well over 120.
Wow.
And that's
would have never
at
guessed
one time.
That.
Yes. We have this really cool map on our wall in the rural living area, core theme that we have. And we have it color-coded. So we've marked every school district like in pink, and then every post office, because that was another thing that was really important. And we have that, you know, in green. And I think the cemeteries, we also – churches and cemeteries we have marked in a different color. But if you look at the map, you just see all these little dots of pink for the schoolhouses scattered throughout Lyon County. And again, they put those so the students, you know, the kids could go to school. Now, they didn't probably go very long, probably through eighth grade was very typical. I mean, my own grandfather quit school after eighth grade.
Had to get to work.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Whether it was a job in town or working the fields. I mean, that's why people had large families. I mean,
more employees.
One of the reasons why if there were big families was
free
to have
labor.
The workers, the free labor. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And so again, most of them were built out of logs or simple frame houses. The one that was part of the Kirkendall settlement, the building was built of logs. But there was actually a couple of different locations for this particular school. And the third location, and which was the final location, was called Valley Star. And I mention this one because we have a really nice, what would you call it, Greg?
It's a stage curtain. Cloth curtain. The backdrop for the stage.
It's a backdrop.
With
and
the
it's
advertising on
it. Yeah. And it's from Valley Star. And it's from the late 1930s. Early 40s is what we've
determined. Evora Wheeler went to school there, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and she's the one who kind of helped date it that because she recognized it. And then we were also able to find a newspaper clipping from one of the advertisements. It talks about, I think, B.A. Jones was the manager of the lumber. I think the Emporia
Lumber Company.
Yeah.
Is that the one that was south of Lowther?
No. That was Fleming, and they were about the time same time frame.
Yeah, same time frame. But anyway, we were able – it said manager, so I was able to find a newspaper article that, said he was the manager from 1937 to – or no, 1939 to 1947. And so we were able to narrow that down, which is incredible because sometimes we can't narrow it down to a specific age – or specific years when we're trying to date something.
Yeah. Pre-1950.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly. So it lends itself to a lot of interpretation for the years. But this one was really nice because we had Evora Wheeler and then we had this newspaper article. But it's a beautiful it's a beautiful curtain. And Greg, you need to tell the story about.
So when we were at the old location at the old Carnegie Library, I was up in the attic one day looking for something, and I found this. It looked like a tarp. I thought, well, I need that because I need to paint some, so I gathered it up and took it downstairs. And when I unrolled it to use it as a paint tarp, I saw all this painting on the other side. Just didn't know it was there, which is not uncommon. We've, been in business since 1937.
Accumulated a few things.
Well, that and early record keeping isn't what it is today. And so had no idea we had it. So it's been up on display ever since. But
and it's huge. I mean, it's just and the colors are so vibrant.
I'm sure it's lead-based paint.
Well, sure.
Yeah, we wouldn't encourage anybody to lick an artifact, but definitely not this one because it's lead-based.
Gloves.
don't lick
that one. But really don't lick that one. But we had a fellow museum professional come in. And she worked at a museum that I think it was donated to them or it was a potential donation, and they had started to unravel it and it was just all cracked inside and just it was beyond repair. And so when she was visiting and she came through our museum, she looked at it and she was just jealous.
It's what she had. Just
yeah.
Not in good shape.
It was like, look. And it's just, it's a great piece of history, especially pre-World War II.
You should have had her bring hers so Greg would have a paint tarp.
There you go.
I still need one.
All these years later, he still needs a paint tarp. So that's kind of the history. Valley Star. The name of the school district is Valley Star. So we have this great, great artifact.
How big was it? The district?
That's a really good question. I'll have to.
If you look at the big map that we have, we were talking about earlier, it looks like they're about every 4 or 5 miles.
Okay.
So if you, and because Lyon County is fairly good size, that's why we had so many. Very few buildings are still there, though.
I was going to say, keep talking while I looked up how.
Stretch.
Yeah, stretch. I'm not finding. Just so I brought a notebook with me, and it's actually a thesis that was written in 1944. And the woman who wrote it, I think her name, Catherine Statler, 1944, just did an incredible job of documenting every school district in Lyon County. And she did it, she has it organized according to the number. And so Valley
now,
Star.
Was each school a district or were there?
Each school was a – so there was a district, and each district had one school.
Okay.
Because it was a one-room schoolhouse. It was K through whatever, and so that was the district.
Yeah, that was the district. And so I was trying to find any information about the Kirkendall, how big the district was.
How many years did we go with schools before they actually made them a district?
That's a very good question, too. And it says, so the first district in Lyon County was actually here in Emporia. It was the Stone District, number one. And it was organized in December of 1859, School District number one was organized in Emporia, Kansas, and classes were open January 14th, 1861.
So not that long
not
without
long. I mean,
districts.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the first one. Interesting thing, though, is district number two was for residents of Americus. And they talk about how they had a schoolhouse built in 1858. But then they also talk that that was the second season or the second school year. And so – you know, unfortunately, again, the 1850s records are really spotty, unfortunately. And so what I guess is it was at somebody's log cabin, somebody's house. And then they officially, you know, so in 1857, that was, you know, they had a subscription school, again, that subscription school, that private school. And then they built a building, a schoolhouse specifically for this in 1858.
That'd be a heck of a Lyon County League tournament with over 100 teams. Yeah.
That would be.
It'd be a couple weeks anyway.
Yeah. A couple weeks.
It would involve. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of schools that couldn't field.
Yeah, I know.
Either team, but you could have some 3-on-3.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, because there was a lot of schools that only had like 10 pupils.
Yeah, I bet.
You know,
yeah.
And but they still hired a teacher to be there for those 10 pupils, and not just the same grade, but throughout.
Yeah, especially out in the county. If you have a farmstead that's quite large, and you have a school on your farmstead, it's probably you and one neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe just
kids.
Two families. Yeah,
and you got seven kids each. There's your
yeah.
school.
That's what I was going to say. Those 10 pupils could just be from two families.
And I knew when my dad was talking about their school, they all didn't go all day. They took turns because they had to help grandpa on the farm. Mm-hmm. So they'd kind of go in shifts. Teacher would be there all day. So maybe the youngins go first, and then the next age group goes 2 hours later, and the next age group goes 2 hours later. So I'm sure it was somewhat similar around here.
Yeah. You know, we're constantly looking at maps at the History Center. I mean, that's between maps and photographs, that's the best way to see how a community has grown and changed. But looking at the schools and how many districts there were and things like that, you can also gauge how much an area changes by their schools. Whether it's the consolidation aspect that happened from the 20s through the 40s, even into, you know, the 60s with the unified school districts.
Not anymore.
But you can tell how a community has changed just by looking at their schools. And, you know, starting off in a log cabin and then going to a frame building and then going to a brick and much larger and, you know, the log cabin. And then, you know, within 40 years, it's a 2-to-3-story brick building. I mean, you really can see how you know, a community has changed just from the schools as well.
Let's take our first break. We'll come back, talk some more firsts dealing with education in Lyon County. You're listening to The On-Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Bruce Davis Construction, your go-to guys when you need commercial dirt work. From demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. Join Ron Thomas and Chuck Samples Monday through Friday at 7:15 for the Newsmaker segment. A different guest and topic daily on KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM. Live and local.
KVOE live and local, and time now for a look at headlines being brought to you by ESB Financial. Do you know that you can open your account fully online with ESB Financial? Just go to the website, visit esbfinancial.com. From the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the latest local headlines, here is Chuck Samples.
Good morning, everybody. A California resident hurt in a crash northeast of Emporia yesterday. Thankfully, minor injuries for this person who was listed as ejected from a semi that rolled over onto her side, but still taken to Newman Regional Health for treatment. Details at KVUE.com. A Missouri man accused of leading a pair of law enforcement pursuits earlier this month, including one from Emporia to near Ottawa, is set for arraignment in early September. Frederick Hogue waived his preliminary hearing yesterday and returns to court September 5th. And then after a steam bath of a day yesterday, another one coming here this afternoon, and more sauna-like conditions expected all the way into the middle of next week. KVUE forecast on that front from the TV 13 weather team, a high of 100 degrees today. Peak heat index reading as high as 106. Good chance of showers and storms and a marginal severe weather risk for tonight, a low of 73. Tomorrow, 98. Friday and Saturday, highs of 97 both days. I'm Chuck Samples, KVUE News.
Currently, we do have a gusty south breeze, partly cloudy skies, 83 degrees at KVOE Live and Local. Headlines are brought to you this hour by ESB Financial, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Call 620-342-3454 for details on how ESB can help you bank better. Bank local with ESB Financial.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. Ron Thomas, Aaron Harder hosting. Greg Jordan and Lisa Soler from Lyon County History Center are our guests. We're talking back to school and some firsts in Lyon County and Emporia educational history. We've kind of talked about the first teacher, some of the first schools, the 120-plus school districts. What about some of the people that graduated early on? There's a few names that we recognize, are there not?
Oh, yeah, especially, you know, if you're looking at the post-secondary. And again, that's why I keep going back to Emporia and Lyon County, you know, the home, you know, teacher town USA. You know, the first graduates of the Kansas State Normal, now Emporia State University, was Ellen Plum and Mary Jane Watson. And so, and I had even mentioned before, Mary Jane Watson, she had opened the first subscription school in 1858, and it was located on the northwest corner of 6th and Commercial. And so that would be Brown's shoe fit.
Yeah.
And so she was and I'm not quite sure what her education background was, because she graduated in 1863 or 65. One of those
early 60s.
I think it was 65 that when Ellen Plum and Mary Jane Watson graduated. So,
and this is from KSN?
KSN, yes. And
well, it would have been in 65 based off of our 65. Off-air conversation, Greg.
Yes. Again, the school started in 1863. So.
And it took them a while.
And we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that whole story. But yeah, Mary Jane Watson, and we have this great picture of her. I mean, it stands. It's probably like 3 feet wide by 5 feet.
It's really a big.
It's really a big picture of her, and she was dedicated to education. I mean, even before she was able, you know, before she went to school at Kansas State Normal, she was opening a school,
teaching before she became a teacher.
And what was really interesting is you know, it was free because the business owners, the residents, the male residents, I'll specify on that, the young men of Emporia were giving money to make sure that it was free. And so, you know, to some degree, Emporia, Lyon County was always on the cutting edge, not only, you know, putting education on a pedestal to some degree, but they knew how important it was. And that's why they also were fighting to try to get the University of Kansas here in Emporia. They had been talking about a state university for quite some time. Now, there were universities already in Kansas at that time. And you also need to, again, put it in historical perspective. We were at that point, we were still just maybe 35 counties in the 1860s. We hadn't expanded to Western Kansas. We had the original 33 counties that were established. And then they established Baker University.
Baker's the first university.
But then
61, by the way.
Yeah, and
so,
then
so were these conversations happening like in the late 50s? Then
yes.
I mean, when they first started.
So yeah. The entire state is really exploding, and people are moving in, and there's lots of things happening. Of course, we had to educate all our kids, and so schools were at the very forefront of this conversation of westward expansion, and so to as a newly formed or talking about being a newly formed state, they wanted the state university. And so that's where Emporia comes in, that we are part of that conversation.
Were most of the early ones church schools?
Religious-based.
Very
yes.
much so, yes.
Yes.
Because they would typically build the church first.
Sure.
Well, you know.
Build the church, build a school,
right.
quote-unquote private.
Right.
So they wanted a public university.
Right.
Well, and what I've, again, found interesting is, so it's 1863. They're debating this. The Civil War is going on, you know, so they, yeah. they did have other things that they, you know, they needed to address dealing with the Civil War, you know, at that state level, the state legislative level. But they're still talking about, we need a university here. We need a state university. And they had narrowed it down to three different locations: Lawrence, Manhattan, which Manhattan already had Bluemont, and then Emporia. And I think that talks about also the people that were serving as state senators and how they were promoting their communities. So
yeah, but there was some serious lobbying going on then.
Absolutely.
You know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for all manner of things, not just education, because again, as the state is forming and exploding, there was money to be made. So because of that, there was lots of people here in the area trying to get things going.
What was the capital in 1860?
It was Lecompton and then Topeka.
Okay.
Yeah, I think by 63 it was
Topeka. It was Topeka.
Yeah, it was Topeka by 63. And so our representative was C.V. Eskridge. And he's a common name we run across in the early history of Emporia and in Lyon County, just heavily involved. In fact, his house was right there on the property.
His house is where Beach Music Hall is now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
and then Eskridge ended up being a lieutenant governor of Kansas.
Was it like a farmstead?
No.
No, it was a regular in-town wood frame house.
So there were quite a few houses where the university is currently?
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, again, if you want to see how a community expands or, you know, how a school expands, you look to, you know, at old maps or photos and you can see where houses once were. Now there's these large buildings. And that's exactly what happened with Eskridge's house. So he lived there right on that, you know, right on 12th Street. And then when he died, and I can't remember if the university purchased the land or if he donated it to the university, but it was at the music hall for a number of years before mm-hmm. they tore it down to make way for Beach Music Hall. But it was there for a while. But he was an advocate for trying to get the University of Kansas here in Emporia.
He was a yay vote, I'm sure.
Yes, very much. And there were several others. I mean, he was able – because the Constitution had put – the state Constitution had said that the university – because they were already talking about a state university, that the state university needed to be centrally located. And again – we're still not expanded to Western Kansas yet. That wouldn't come for another 10 years, 8 to 10 years. And so his argument was Manhattan and Lawrence were not centrally located. Emporia was. And he also was trying to garner support from the southeast part of Kansas that, you know, if they want to attend university, they're going to have to even go further north. Emporia is centrally located within those, you know, early counties. It needs to be here. So Eskridge had introduced a bill to
So the voting is going to take – how's the voting done and who's voting on this?
The state senator – well, the House, the state House and then the state Senate. Yeah,
okay.
The Senate. And Kirkendall at that point – or not Kirkendall, but Eskridge was a representative. And he tried, doggone it. He tried, and he introduced it. And then this gentleman by the name of Emery, I never caught his first name. And
we'll call him Bob.
We'll call him Bob. But
Bob Emery.
Yeah.
Bob
Emery. Mr. Emery.
Great guy.
And, you know, honestly, that might be one of the reasons why they didn't list his first name, is because he was against, like, adamantly against having it in Emporia. He was an advocate for it being in Lawrence.
So was he a senator, representative?
He was a representative as well. So Representative Emery, so Eskridge from Emporia introduced the bill. And shortly after, Emery said, well, let's do some amendments. They talked about it. And then they totally scrapped Eskridge's bill and brought in Emery's bill for Lawrence. And then they voted. And we lost by about 5 votes. A couple people were sick. In fact, they called him out in the newspaper article. Mr. Young, or I can't remember the name, was home ill, but he probably could have made it if he wanted to. Bob Young.
Yeah.
Bob Young. but there were a couple of you know, just no votes, and or not no votes, but they abstained from
it. Was there a little shadiness going on here?
I think there
might
have been.
That never happens in politics.
I know.
Really.
Yeah.
Very
maybe.
Above board.
Yeah, above board. Yeah.
Especially at the state and federal level.
Oh, absolutely.
So, again, we ended up losing. But, you know, part of that was, okay, so you didn't get that, you know.
Do we know what the final vote total was? What kind of numbers were we looking at between the senators?
It was like 33 to 38. Because, again, we didn't have a lot of representatives.
Yeah.
Those are almost numbers for you know, Senate now.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the
exactly.
Senate was
barely 70.
Yeah. The Senate back then was I think it was 17 to 9 or something like that. I mean, it was definitely a larger.
It was probably one per county and 35 counties.
Yeah. And so definitely a wider margin with the Senate. But, you know, with the House, it was definitely closer. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, who knows how that would have played out for us. But they decided, okay, so we also need an agriculture university and we need a teacher university. And so they decided to give Manhattan the ag college.
Land grant.
The land grant, yeah. And then they gave the Kansas State Normal to Emporia. And that was kind of the negotiating that they did.
And the state university was University of Kansas?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
okay.
The ag school was Kansas State University?
Yes.
Okay. So it's state school and state ag school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then teaching school.
Yes.
Where did the word normal come in?
You know, it's interesting. I've looked and I can't quite figure out. There's a place at Normal, Illinois, and it also is a teacher's college. So it was named after the college. But I can't really find the beginnings of that word.
There were no abnormal schools, correct?
Well, there are. But
correct. But not in name.
Not in name.
Actually, the concept of normal was European at first, and then also – European, they came over, they started it. So they have it in Europe. They brought that concept, that post-secondary or the normal school, to the eastern United States. They had normal schools. And so it kind of expanded that way. But for why they called it normal, I still haven't been able to find out what was the name. You know, why did they call it normal? Other than that was just the concept that was in Europe that they brought over. So
when we were in the running for this and the proposal came and top of the list was we were more centrally located than any of the other two finalists.
Yes.
Anything else in that package we know? Land-wise, what were we going to do?
Well, and one of the caveats to that is
– Money and land.
Money and land. And so that was also something that sweetened the deal that – Lawrence was able to secure the money.
Well, because Quantrill had burned it to the ground, so there was a lot of free space.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was probably about the same, same time frame. But they also had to come up with $15,000 and X amount of acreage. And so somebody, you know, swooped in and donated the land, and they were able to pull the money together. Now, it was, though, that if they hadn't been able to get the land and the money, or if something fell through, Emporia was the next in line to have it. So they were kind of, Emporia was the backup in case there was some failures on Lawrence's part to be able to get the money and land. But as we know today, they did not fall through.
Did not, no.
So the vote was in what year again?
February of 1863.
And then the Kansas State Normal opens shortly thereafter?
Shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
And the first building is where?
The Normal College opened?
So we opened in
February of 63.
Yeah, February of 63, but we didn't – we used
– We were established. We didn't really start till later that year.
Yeah, they didn't have the building until, I think, 65.
Where was first building?
Where the sunken garden is now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right next to – Eskridge, right next to Eskridge's
yeah,
place.
In that same area. Yeah.
So the first building wasn't until 65 then? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'll tie back in with another story. So the very first purpose-built school in Emporia was the old stone building. And it was built by bond issue, the first school in Kansas built by bond issue. And they spent $5,000. Now, the article in the paper, Gazette, said that spending that much on education would be the ruination of this community. $5,000. Of course, that's 1860s. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But when Emporia State started, they would use the second floor of that building for their first classes until they built their own building where the sunken garden is now.
Where was the stone building?
Between 6th and 7th Streets and Constitution and Congress Streets. And that plot of land was always designated for a school. And so they built the stone school, the first stone school, for that five. And I've seen where it was $6,000 and then I've seen where it was $5,000.
We'll call it five then.
But again, to be the first – $5,500. Yeah. To be the first school district or, you know, the first, I guess the first community in Kansas to build a school using bonds. Again, it goes back to they felt that education was important, even though some people didn't. And I don't think it was that they didn't feel education was important. It was the fact that they were spending so much money. That they were trying to get that much money.
Well, quick little aside, at that same time frame, 1861, 1863, Emporia had two bond issues to build the railroad through here. So the Katy was built through here first, the MKT, Missouri, Kansas, Texas, and then the Santa Fe was built a few years later. But between those two bond issues, they raised $400,000, which is obviously quite a little bit of money when there's not that many people around. But they knew they had to bring the railroad through here to grow. So, this all happened at the same time.
$5,500 is about $225,000.
Wow.
In today's money.
So, a good chunk of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the ruin of the community, though.
No, not at all. Because, again, they voted twice for $200,000 bond issues.
So, do we know anything about enrollment during those early years as far as how many students we had?
Off the top of my head, no. I did find.
But we had at least two.
Yeah, we at least had two.
At least two.
At least three for the school. And you know, going back to, you know, that post-secondary, yeah, we had a couple. And those were actually the first two graduates. And I did find the years. The university was founded in 63. The first class did not begin until February of 65. When it was housed in the stone building belonging to the Emporia School District. And then the school's first graduating class consisted of the two women, 1867. So then we have the dates. I did write it down at some point. So
there were two graduates then?
Yeah, just the two graduates in 1867, Ellen Plum and Mary Jane Watson. Yeah. So, and again, looking at, so you have the post-secondary, but then you also have the school district.
Yeah.
And they're building the stone building. And that stone building was there for a number of years until, I think, Garfield Or no, actually, I think that was still there. The stone building was still there. They built Garfield. Garfield was the first high school that was built in Emporia.
On the corner of 7th and Constitution.
Yes, maybe a little.
Garfield School.
Okay.
Yes.
Just north of Stone Building.
Just south of the Stone Building.
No, north. It would have been.
It would have been just north of the.
He had to think about it.
Same block.
Yeah, same block. Yeah. And
so
again,
So they built Garfield High School, and it wasn't around very long, but they outgrew it, so they tore it down and built what's there now.
In 1914, and they actually we have a really cool picture in our collection that they built the high school, the new high school in 1914, like right behind. The stone building, or right behind Garfield. Yep. Like, there was no room hardly in between those two buildings.
So the first high school is actually 1914 then?
No, Garfield was the first one.
Okay.
And that was built in 1881. And then in 1914, they built the one that's still standing today.
Like I say, they outgrew Garfield pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So they had been talking about building a new high school for quite some time before they finally went ahead and did that.
And again, it comes down to money and getting the support. I mean, some processes hasn't changed at all.
Garfield to Lowther to current high school.
To the current high school.
It's only three.
Yeah, three high schools. Because again, those smaller schools, you know, whether
Was North built before South?
Yes.
The same time?
No.
North first, then South.
Yeah.
Once they outgrew North, they built South.
Right, because everybody was going in the north building, all junior high and high school kids. So then they split them out.
The junior high was built in 1925, Lowther Junior. Yeah, and it was named after Mr. Lowther.
Superintendent. Jim Lowther's father, grandfather. Anyway.
Yeah.
So it was related to Jim Lowther?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Relation. Again, it was either his father or grandfather, but he was superintendent of
it
schools.
His grandfather.
At the time.
So how big was Garfield?
I don't have – I'm just looking, thinking of the picture I've seen. Maybe half the size of the current high school in width.
Okay.
So about half – and it was two or three stories.
Okay.
But yeah. Again, not
probably big, half that block.
Half that block.
Yeah. The argument in 1880 was whether a large central building should be constructed worth $30,000 to $40,000. So the price has gone up.
Yeah. Sure has.
You know, from that $5,000, or whether smaller one or two room buildings should be built throughout the town. So that was a conversation they were having as well. And you know, I captured a moment in time when, you know, I was looking at 1921, looking at the different schools, because they were just like they are today, you know, with Timmerman and Riverside. Sure. and Logan and, you know, the other schools. But in 1921, we had Century School, and that was at the northeast corner of Commercial and 10th.
Really a nice looking school, too. It's a shame they tore that.
And it was built in 1900. That's why they called it Century, to recognize the new century. There was Central School, which was just slightly north of the current Riverside School. That was built in 1900. Kansas Avenue School, southwest corner of Market and Kansas. Lincoln, which was at Lincoln and 6th. Maynard, which was at 14 Congress, and there's been a couple of incarnations with that school. Union was on the northeast corner of Union and 4th. And then Walnut was on the southwest corner of Walnut and 8th.
Where Walnut Park is now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 1921. So those were kind of the elementary schools. Then you had C of E, the Emporia Automobile Tractor School. Which that was a new one for me.
Where was that at?
807 Commercial, the Emporia Automobile Tractor School.
It'd be that where Spelman's is.
Yeah, yeah. And then Emporia Business College. That was in a lot of different locations. In 1921, I think it was on
807. Be about where the Granada is.
Oh yeah.
right?
Yeah, and the Granada was built in
29.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Yeah. And then the Emporia Business College was in a couple of different locations. It was later in the Burnett Building, where Burnett Plumbing is, on the second floor. In fact, they added that in 28 or 29, they added that second floor specifically for the college.
Okay.
And then the college lasted through World War II when it closed because they didn't have the enrollment because a lot of women and men were joining the military or they were in the workforce. And so they were being basically trained on the job versus having to go to the Emporia Business College. Emporia School of Music and Art was at 1005 Merchant, and then we had Kansas State Normal School, and then Sacred Heart School was at 122 Cottonwood. So you had all those schools in addition to, you know, the high school. And so, yeah, that was all the schools.
When did C of E start?
C of E? Oh, I forgot to mention C of E. 1885-ish?
So 20 years of just KSN and then?
Yes. And then
add a second college?
Second college, yeah. And then in the meantime, you also have the Emporia Business College, which was actually, I mean, really important to helping with those other skills. You know, they had classes in calligraphy and typewriter, you know, learn how to use a typewriter. Yeah. And it was a business college. And looking through old newspapers, they were a graduate of Emporia Business College. So it was – they just never found a permanent home until they hit – until they built that second floor on top of the Burnett Building. And then within 15 years – they were closed because of World War II. That really kind of did them in.
Let's take our second break. We'll come back and talk about some rural Lyon County schools. You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Bruce Davis Construction, your go-to guys when you need commercial dirt work. From demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. We want you to feel good. Tune in for Feel Good Friday.
Making you feel good.
Friday after the local news during the 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. hours on KVOE 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, live and local.
KVOE live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines. Being brought to you by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive. Call 620-342-2613 when your car needs help. You don't have to go where anyone tells you, go where you want. Also brought to you by Jane Utech with Remax Eck Real Estate. She has the experience to get the job done in today's real estate market. Call 620-343-5100. Now from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the sports you need, here is Blake Cripps.
Well, the Royals needed more heroics in the eighth inning and got it again last night. This time it was Vinny Pasquantino with a two-run single in the eighth inning to put the Royals in front for a 4-3 win over Chicago last night to win the series from the White Sox. Michael Wacha picked up the win on the mound for KC, scattering five hits and two runs across seven innings. He's now 8-6 on the year. Michael Massey had a homer for KC in the third. We'll join coverage this afternoon just before 1 o'clock as the Royals and White Sox meet for getaway day, 1:10 first pitch, right here on KVOE. Royals did make a move just ahead of the trade deadline yesterday, acquiring Oakland pitcher Lucas Ursaig and White Sox infielder Paul DeJong. DeJong struggling at the plate this year, hitting just .228, but does have 18 home runs, could get moved to the outfield. Meanwhile, Ursaig has a 3.68 ERA, 36 and two-thirds innings of work, a fastball that touches 98-plus miles per hour, and the Royals have control of Ursaig until 2030. Jayhawk football opening up training camp yesterday, returning to campus after a 9-win season and a win in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl last year. Yesterday, the first practice of the year for the Crimson and Blue. The Wildcats reported to campus yesterday, and Kansas State will be on the practice field for the first time for fall training camp today. And the Team USA women's gymnastics team was dominant on the way to a team gold medal. Tonight's primetime in Paris coverage will include the men's all-around final. That's sports. From the KVOE Sports Desk, I'm Blake Cripps.
Thank you, Blake. Sports headlines brought to you today by JNU Tech with RE/MAX Eck Real Estate. For buying or selling a home or property, contact Jan at 620-343-5100. Also brought to you by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive at 708 Lantern Lane. For more information, visit thurstonsplusautobody.com or you can find them on Facebook.
Ron Thomas, Aaron Harder hosting. Lisa Soler and Greg Jordan from the Lyon County History Center are our guests. Been talking Emporia and Lyon County educational firsts. Had somebody text during the break. Where did the one-room schoolhouse come from? And what school was that?
I know it came from Marion County, so it was not from Lyon County.
But it was brought over as a memorial.
Yes, they relocated it, I believe, from Marion County.
While we were ESU?
Yes, while ESU. Okay.
We're talking about the one on ESU's campus.
Yes. Correct. Yes.
Right next to the Fallen Educators Memorial.
Yes. So, yeah, in one-room schools, I mean, going back, these districts, these, you know, 100-plus, 120-plus districts we had, a majority of them were the one-room, maybe two-room schools, but were
With similar size and function as that memorial.
Exactly. And you could tell, though, how much money the district had by their school.
If it was stone, it was a little nicer than the log cabin, and then, of course, wood.
Or if it was one room versus two, you know, two rooms.
Maybe a little wood stove in there.
Yeah.
And a little AC. Chalkboard.
A little air conditioning.
Yeah, that's the window.
Yeah, windows. The windows would open and close. So that was the air conditioning. You know, there was also some interesting names. One of them was Gumbo. That was school district number 74.
Out in the county.
Out in the county. Gumbo, but it was later changed to Eagle Creek. There was Fruitland. That was district number 15 around the Americas area. And there was a settlement,
probably
Fruitland.
An orchard or something nearby.
Yes, Fruitland, very much. Okay. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what it was. There were a couple of families that lived in that area that had orchards, and orchards were way more common than what I think people realize. In fact, on the state, so you know, you have the federal census that's done in years ending in zero. Well, Kansas did an agriculture census. Every 10 years.
It was very specific.
And it was very specific, but they did that in years ending in five, every 10 years. And they would list how many pounds of butter people made, how many, you know, how many trees they had for different kinds of fruit. So some people
– pounds of fruit the pounds, harvested.
It's an incredible wealth of information from that. Only two or three other states did that individual state census. And so, you know, we use that quite a bit. There was a federal census.
Is it digitized now?
It is digitized, yeah.
It'd be cool to do a program just how much different produce and stuff came out of
Lyon County. Was it apples? Apples here?
Oh, apples.
Lots of apples and pears too.
Cherry. Okay. Cherry trees, yeah, different. But so this Fruitland district was because this particular area had a lot of fruit, had a lot of orchards. Model was 100 in District 113. Perseverance.
Excuse me for interrupting. If you follow 4-H, a lot of those names came from these school districts.
Okay.
So Badger Creek and so on and so forth.
Boston.
Model. Boosters.
Happy Harvesters.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of them were named after creeks that were in the area. So Dry Creek, Duck Creek, Hoosier Creek, Forest Hill. Some of them were named after the communities. You know, we had a lot of, you know, ghost towns, but, you know, a lot of little communities throughout Lyon County. Chicago Mound.
That's the only thing left there is the cemetery.
Forest Hill is another one. So again, one of them though, and I was trying to tie some of these school districts in with some of our artifacts that we have. And within the last couple of years, there was a school district called Stony Point. And it was school district number 64. And it's a couple of miles away from the Morris County border. But, you know, I've been on here before. We've been on here before and we've talked about Dunlap, which was former enslaved persons moving from the South, exodusters. Anyway, this one, Stony Point, had a large number of African-American students there because they were part of that Dunlap, part of that exodusters. Well, we have in our collection now a book, a school register from the 1920s. And you'll recognize some of the names, or I recognize some of the names that were those early African-American families that came as part of the exodusters. Another artifact we have is the Rinker School District. Now, that is one of the few schools that is still here. It's a private residence, I believe. And it was a larger one.
Tell my story.
That's what I'm going to tell. So this one, and I hope that law enforcement does not get upset that I kept this, but I had just started working there. It happened 10 years ago. I had just started working at the museum. We were still in the old location, and a gentleman comes in with this bell, a school bell, and he plops it down on the table, and he says, I want to donate this to you, but I don't want to fill out any paperwork or anything. All I can tell you, it was stolen from the Rinker School. And I was like, I mean, I had only been working maybe a month, and I was like, I don't know what the protocol is to this. so what's the procedure? And I was like, well, but I still need you. He was like, nope. All I can tell you is for sure it was stolen from the Rinker School, and he left. And I tell that story. We have it on display. I tell that story because sometimes – you know, when we receive an object and we're getting ready to bring it into our collection, sometimes the history is already set, you know? And so here we were able to bring in another object into our collection with another level of history, one that I can't quite document. I filled out the paperwork and just put anonymous and wrote down what he had told me, that it was stolen from Rinker School.
So there was no history on a report of the bell ever being stolen?
That I did not look for. At some point when I have a little time, I'll probably do a little more research and see if I can't find.
Hopefully it was taken before the school, like, was already going away, and somebody just took it before they tore it down.
Yeah,
let's just go with that.
Yeah. You know, or something like that. Just, you know, was it taken, and maybe his father or grandfather had it, and he's like, I know that's the story, but it was funny because it was like, I'm too new for this. And I went to Greg, and he was like, just put anonymous on it. So
it wasn't Greg that turned it in.
No, it was not Greg that turned it in. But
Rinker School being over by Rinker Corner?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so the school is still
there. The building is still there.
Yeah, the building is still there.
It's a private
bell. Without the bell. And it's a really small bell. It's one that would have been kept on the teacher's desk. Okay. It's not a school bell like you have here.
Right.
you know, no, it's not a big bell.
Okay.
It's the smaller handheld teacher bell that would be kept on the desk. But that was, and I love telling that story because, again, it's just another level to, it's not just a school bell from Rinker, but it was a school bell from Rinker School that was stolen at some point.
Yeah,
somebody kept it, and either the guilt got to them or something, and they're like, I need to get rid of it. I'm going to donate it to the museum. So they donated it to the museum.
Where it should be.
Where it should be. And now we can tell the story of Rinker School as well as the story of the bell being stolen. So,
and if anybody wants to see these artifacts, they are welcome to come down to the coolest place in town.
Coolest place in town.
The Lyon County History Center downtown. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you for having us.
That's going to wrap it up for the on-air chat. We've been brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Thanks to Ron Thomas for hosting and Sean Thornton for producing. You're listening to KVOE, 1400 AM and 96.9 FM. We are live and local.
live and local. 1400 AM KVOE Emporia, 96.9 FM K245 BQ Emporia.